You're listening to Security Wire Weekly, a SearchSecurity.com podcast for July 23rd, 2008, Virtualization Security. Welcome to the program. I'm Rob Westerveld. In this edition, we'll talk about virtualization security with Chris Hoff. Chris is a chief security architect at Unisys. He will be giving a briefing on virtualization security at Black Hat called The Four Horsemen of the Virtualization Security Apocalypse. We'll ask him to explain. Up next, Chris Hoff, but first, this message.
When it comes to analyzing a network, protecting enterprise data, or fighting malware, you can plop down thousands of dollars for a commercial product, or you can get tons of great functionality from a free tool. Let SearchSecurity.com show you how some of the industry's best free and open source tools work in our exclusive screencast series. Each month, one of SearchSecurity.com's best experts will offer a step-by-step video presentation showing you how to use the most powerful tools and software, including Nessus, Snort, UTM, and so much more. And it's all free. Don't wait. Watch and learn today. Visit SearchSecurity.com/screencast. That's SearchSecurity.com/screencast.
Chris Hoff is a chief security architect at Unisys. He will be giving a briefing on virtualization security at Black Hat called The Four Horsemen of the Virtualization Security Apocalypse. Chris, what are we doing wrong when it comes to virtualization security, and is there really time here to reverse it?
Well, I'm not so sure it's much of an issue of what we're doing wrong. It's, I think, really an issue about confusing messages in the market space about what we ought to be doing and how you should prioritize what you're doing and what tools, tool sets, and adjustments need to be put in place to deal with securing our virtualized environments versus our physical environments. So the talk is really, despite the interesting title, about really trying to clarify for folks what the architectural implications of virtualization mean to how they apply the existing security tools they have, as well as emerging security tools, to this problem set, what they need to look out for in both the short and long term that will, from either a disruptive innovation perspective or just from a general integration perspective, what problems they're really going to face that you won't see mentioned in the glossy slicks and marketing slides of some of the existing vendors and emerging vendors in the security space. So, I mean, it's really quite tricky when you get down to some of the nuts and bolts about what the implications of virtualization mean to security. You know, as folks are finally getting into what I call the production phase of virtualization, which is tackling a lot of the non-QA, non-dev environments, and they're segmenting their internal networks and they're looking and scratching their heads with virtualization initiatives about how does this apply to my DMZ and what does that mean to PCI and compliance. When they start thinking about how to secure those environments and actually who's securing them, boy, you're seeing some pretty nasty train wrecks occur in organizations large and small because people really don't know what they don't know, and they don't know what they should be worried about. Whether it's just a whole bunch of fluff and just another layer, just another an adaptation, or whether they're going to kind of really have to rethink what they're doing. And I think it's a balance of both of those sets of answers.
Sure, and there's a lot going on here too, because we're not just talking about the tools, the security tools, but we're also talking about the management issues. I mean, some security experts have said that the risks associated with virtualization is really more so with the management of the technology and not necessarily the technology itself. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, so I think that statement may shine a little bit brightly depending on a little bit more brightly depending on which side of the fence you stand on. I've mentioned many times that I think in the short term the largest problem we have with virtualization is organizational and not technical. The reason for that is the folks that hold the keys to the kingdom in terms of securing our virtualization environments actually for the most part, are not security professionals these days. They're not even network professionals. There's a whole other class of administrators, virtual server administrators, that kind of have reduced or boiled down security to a couple of clicks, for example, in VMware and Virtual Center and drop-down boxes. And, when you're collapsing and virtualizing the network, the operating system, the applications, and security all down into one tidy little package, it becomes difficult to figure out who's responsible for what, where the line gets drawn, how troubleshooting is approached, change control and management. So it definitely has, if you put that stuff in one bucket, some pretty profound impacts from the perspective of operations and organizations. And then from a technical side, just to not dismiss the technical challenges, a lot of the tool sets that we have today simply don't adapt well to a virtualized environment, even given what we see being marketed by both traditional existing security vendors and emerging security vendors. The collapse of what I call the access layer into the virtual switching environment means that in many cases the appliances that we've deployed physically, that have one gets into cable and one gets out of cable, and when bits stop, you understand where things break.
Mm-hmm.
Simply don't work the same way, and the notion of the four horsemen, really comes down to talking about how do you approach in the replicating in the virtual world the physical defense in depth or defense in breadth strategy of separate and segregated security functions, IDS, IPS, firewall, AV, versus collapsing into one monolithic virtual appliance in the virtual world. That's number one. Number two is when you actually end up trying to replicate and install the same sorts of functionality, topologies, and resilient configurations in a virtual world, you, at least today, will find that in many cases it's impossible, both from the maturity of the tool sets and what you can and cannot do in virtual environments, given the networking capabilities. The third is that given the first two, there are some tremendous performance, scalability, and resiliency issues that go along with what it means to now have all of these security functions being crammed into software appliances, whereas today, to get the same levels of throughput, we rely on really specialized FPGA or ASIC-driven boxes with heavily tweaked kernels, and now we're basically saying, where before, if I put an appliance in front of a 20 or 100 server server farm, I should, there'll be no difference when I just go ahead and put 20 or 30 virtual servers behind a software-driven instance that's competing for the same CPU and memory as the VMs it's serving, and which ultimately then drives to the fact that, well, okay, if I'm not getting rid of my host software, if I'm not getting rid of physical appliances, and I'm adding software with these virtual security appliances, administration and training costs, then my costs actually increase; they don't decrease. So that's kind of the gist of the four horsemen talk that I'm giving, which is kind of exposing some of these hidden issues.
So the bottom line is that virtualization is actually going to cost more, not less.
I think in the short term, yes, as we try to sort out this operational overlap. I mean, you've still got whole network and security teams there. You still have physical appliances. You still have the stuff and the software you install on the hosts anyway. And now you're going to add additional layers of cost with virtualization. The virtualization layer, even though that's coming down, and if, in some cases with like Hyper-V, it's $28. But then you have this it's squeezing the balloon problem. I mean, you ultimately aren't getting rid of management problems, and this is the most complex, simple solution I've ever seen. You squeeze a balloon and the stuff just kind of pops out the either end. So while we're getting thinner and thinner and more simple with the virtualization stacks as they commoditize, the management stacks of these things, given the absolute ubiquity of what virtualization means, storage, networking, clients, servers, applications, operating, you name it, we're really, really going to, it's a cost transference. So at a minimum, you'll stay the same if you were simply due to one-to-one and not add any security. But once you realize you have to tackle these problems, your costs are going to go up. They're not going to go down.
Yeah, I was listening to Alessandro Parelli. At Burton Catalyst Conference recently. And one of his main points was, actually, it's virtualization.info, right?
Yeah, well, he also has a fantastic virtualization congress coming up shortly here in the UK, which will be very, very interesting.
To keep our eyes on that. One of his main points was that it seems like companies seem to forget all about the basics when they go to deploy some sort of virtualized environment. And that goes with my second question here, which is, can't some of the same security tool used in a physical environment work in a virtual environment, or is it really just not that simple?
No, well, absolutely. First of all, at a minimum, what you should be doing is doing the same sorts of things that you use to secure your physical environment, your virtual environment. But if you look at a lot of the research and interviews done, people are not doing that for some reason, and that reason generally stems from the fact that the folks that have governance over that infrastructure are now outside of that process, because now you've got virtual system administrators, and we've got the ability to spin VMs up anywhere, anytime, connected to anything, and you know we don't necessarily have the same amount of oversight, governance, and change control. So the reason why we're seeing folks scratching their heads and security teams exercising and network teams exercising veto power is as now it's starting to touch production systems and not QA and dev, which weren't typically segmented or secured other than kind of a firewall between your internal networks and these LANs. They're starting to freak out because they realize that, I don't have the visibility I have. I don't have the change control. I don't have the troubleshooting capabilities. So you absolutely can use the same set of tools.
Let's talk a little bit about something that Alessandro was saying, which was he was sort of looking into the future and saying that we're going to start to see the deployment of a new generation of security tools at the host level as part of virtualization platform capabilities. Do you agree with that? Do you think the virtualization vendor is going to come on board and have those security capabilities built in?
So my answer is sort of. We over time, I wrote about this a little bit. Over time, we transition with our focus on where we invest, where we spend, and how security controls are implemented, and we kind of waffle between the network, the host, and information. And it's kind of like a, if you want to visualize it in one way, I kind of did it in a sine wave. So we're kind of in the mode of, on one hand, of becoming more quote-unquote information-centric, protecting information and data itself, and putting controls in place irrespective of where they live and the way to clamp down on that. But at the same point in time, virtualization does drive the need to get as close to protecting the actual instance of the containers of information, which would be the host. So the reason I answered sort of is you're going to see the network-based appliances turn into virtual appliances. You could consider that host-based or network-based or a hybrid thereof. You're also going to see the modification of host-based security tools, either as both as virtual appliances and those that sit on the host, take advantage of APIs delivered by the virtualization platform providers, such as VMware's VMSafe, enable you to have fewer moving parts and have to play fewer rounds of kind of network ping pong of traffic moving in and out of physical host or virtual host into physical host into the physical network against the physical appliance and back again. Mm-hmm. So we're going to see this first iteration of tools. I actually talk about it in terms of they're less about security and more about visibility and visualization, because a lot of these tools that you're seeing pop up now do a really good job of trying to claw back the visibility that's lost but from the network and security guys and presenting kind of a single pane of glass to the virtual system administrators, the sysadmins, the network and security guys, and getting them to understand how traffic flows actually move around their network. Because if you look at an enterprise today, physically or virtually, one of the biggest problems you have is that the understanding business processes, application workflow, is is an absolute nightmare. If you ask somebody to figure out all of the assets that contribute to an application in a complex environment, 9 times out of 10, you'll find out that there's some box sitting under some DBA's desk that is so absolutely critical to the process that when somebody unplugs it to vacuum the floor, you wonder why your production environment goes down. So, you know, taking that whole business process mapping issue and applying it to the virtualization world means that, you know, we're really going to have to get on top of understanding that aspect of our business to better protect it. So, you know, you'll see visualization tools bubble to the surface. They'll become more intelligent. They'll give us a better view into things. We'll find that as we have difficulties of integration, we'll rely more on the platform, in some cases to do certain things, more on host-based, and then virtual appliances because it's easy. It's not necessarily the best from a scalability perspective, but it's easy. So, yeah, that's why I said sort of long answer to a short question.
I wanted to actually get into a little bit of your dispute with Simon Crosby, the CTO of Citrix. You guys have been going back and forth a little bit. Are you still smoking the wrong end of the cigar?
I'm not sure I ever was. Sure.
Actually,
that's a great analogy.
Why don't you tell people where is your blog so that our listeners can go to that?
It's rationalsecurity.typepad.com.
Well, Simon seems to say that, in his view, security should be handled by the security vendors, not the virtualization vendors. And I sort of simplified that a bit from our conversation. He was here on the program, and he said, in his clarification, Citrix is not a security vendor for guests of the virtualized infrastructure, meaning that they shouldn't be securing the OS and the apps. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I think ultimately my clarification there is plenty of space for third-party vendors, as well as the operating system manufacturers, to provide security for the operating systems and the app stacks and above, as they always have. So, yes, I agree with that portion of the statement. What I objected to was the way in which it was framed initially, which is, you know what, I just insert this entire new layer of software. My job is to protect that software layer, and that's all I'm going to do. Now, if you put that in a kind of in the corner, and then you look at how we started this conversation, which is in saying that business processes, topologies, tool sets, methodologies, all change in many cases, some radically, some subtly, not, you know, basically just pointing at your layer and saying that's all I'm going to do without understanding the profound implications this has across the entire ecosystem, storage, networking, client, software, I think is a profoundly silly approach. And that's kind of what I pointed out. I said, you know, at a minimum, what I liked about VMware's approach, not qualifying the architecture as being better or worse with VMSafe, is at least understanding the fact that security applications as we know them today and the ecosystem that actually do protect the hosts also must change in order to interact with the virtualization platform.
Mm-hmm.
So that's been completely validated by the fact that you had, you know, when VMSafe was announced, all the top-tier vendors basically scrambling to join the program, modify their applications because they understand this and take advantage of that API. I still maintain that if Citrix was first out of the gate with that notion versus being caught flat-footed as they are today because they don't have that API, the reality is that Simon's tune may have been different. The reality is I think VMSafe, VMSafe in its first iteration, and it still has a ways to go, will really leverage a much better extension of what we can do from a security perspective in VMware's world than what you might be able to do in Citrix's world. That'll probably change. I mean, you're already seeing this notion of what they're talking about with Project Kensho and doing, you know, essentially the ability to have portable self-contained virtualization and applications spread across any virtualization platform, and that means security also. But you know, that was really the problem I had with the argument, was it was very, very myopic, very narrowly focused, and puts us right back into, it kind of perpetuates the same problem we have right now. I'll protect my little space, you guys go over there and sort out your security problems, and guarding your own patch is nice.
Sure. By opening up their APIs as VMware did with its VMSafe program, didn't they sort of open up the hypervisor a little bit to security threats?
You have to kind of understand how and what the VMSafe API actually gives you exposure to. All that information is unfortunately under NDA.
Sure.
I will suggest to you that in many cases, it's still a case of squeezing the balloon, right? I mean, you're basically taking elements of transferring the risk from perhaps one area to another. But when people have kind of abused the term of opening up the hypervisor, and without violating NDA, I mean, some of these details will come out later. Mm-hmm. But the reality is, I think. As those details become and the solutions become more readily available, the people will get a lot more comfort about what these APIs do or don't do and do or don't expose. My, it's not a panacea. I think it's a first good pass to helping enable and solve some of these problems that we have. But like anything, it's a trade-off. Certainly that, I would suggest that we're much better off with APIs from a security perspective, given what they expose from the hypervisor, what they don't, enabling us to better secure our environments and then deal with the risks therein than not having it at all. And Rob, you bring up a really interesting point, and I say this kind of all the time, and I forgot to kind of intro it. There are really three discussions that become very circular and entangled when you're talking about virtualization and security. Three approaches. One is securing virtualization, which is our need to essentially, as we get into these arguments and debates about things, we talk about, God, it's a hypervisor, it's a whole new layer. What are we going to actually do to secure these actual virtualization platforms? What new risks do they bring? And you thrash on that.
Sure.
Then the second category is virtualizing security. Hey, how do I operationalize what I do today in a non-virtual environment when I virtualize it? How do I actually deploy this policy, this firewall, this IDS, IPS? And so that's a huge challenge. And then the third challenge and discussion point is, security through virtualization. What benefits do I get with, encapsulation, compartmentalization, partitioning, the inherent isolation capabilities that I get in virtualization? And how does that help actually reduce my risk posture? The problem is we can enter and discuss any single element of virtualization and security, and depending upon where you start, you can throw up an objection from any three of those areas, and we get really tangled up in, with VMSafe and how I virtualize security. It looks like it's a fantastic solution to some nasty, gritty problems. And usually, what people do, instead of tackling, okay, great, we'll deal with how we operationalize it. Somebody raises their hand and says, oh, yes, but you're asking me to trust this whole new layer, this whole new operating system, if you will, of virtualization. And so then we get into that argument. But the reality is we do the same thing with our operating system vendors today. We trust that somebody's doing something to secure them, and if not, we will find ways of, compensating controls to deal with it. So a lot of it is about common sense, about not overreacting, but reacting appropriately. Again, a long answer to a short question. Yeah, the reality is anytime you expose anything via API, you certainly run the risk of actually increasing risk. Sorry to be confusing in the wording there, but the reality is we have to be and apply some rational common sense to understand, okay, what is being exposed, how does it increase or decrease my risk, and what is the reduction of risk overall when I implement a solution based on these things?
And so, if anything, VMware is being more proactive in terms of security as a result of that, because the patching has been maybe an indicator of that. 15 patches in 2006, have surpassed 70 patches so far this year.
Yeah, but that's another thing too. Let's look at what's actually being patched. For the majority of those patches, mm-hmm. they were actually really focused on the service console, which is a Linux distribution based partition that's used to manage the infrastructure. The majority has not been the actual hypervisor itself.
Oh, okay.
So we have to be careful about separating. And so now when we look at 3i, the embedded version, which doesn't have an entire Linux distribution, you know, sitting there on the side of it that needs to be patched and updated, there have been far fewer, and will continue to be far fewer patches issued for that. And that will happen across all vendors. When you buy your new Dell server off the rack in a year, and you boot that bad boy up for the first time, and out of BIOS, you get a choice that says, hi, which one of the 17 virtualization platforms do you want me to deploy on this out of Flash? A lot of this code is going to be very skinny, but again, squeezing the balloon, we're going to be exposing this to a ton of new management applications to manage all of them. But the reality is, we're going to end up with hypervisors today are thin modern code anyway. We've learned a decent amount of lessons. But we're going to see an interesting set of patch management challenges as it relates to virtualization because, when we have this whole new layer sitting below our operating systems, which we still have to continue to patch, we have to think about what that means from the perspective of availability when we actually have to patch the virtualization platforms, too. It's kind of a replication of problem sets. But I think VMware, back to your point, more or less than then, that's kind of a silly argument. The reality is I think their approach makes more sense in an enterprise from the perspective of making available to me, the consumer, the customer, solutions that allow me to deploy that technology in a more secure fashion over time.
Mm-hmm.
Ultimately, and I just wrote about this, Citrix made a very smart investment in Zensource more specifically, because when you look at in my opinion, the ultimate goal, the end goal, and you can read through some of the lines in this Project Kensho announcement, virtualization to them is a means to an end. It's a way of building more resilient, flexible, reliable, and available delivery mechanisms for applications, which is what Citrix does. I mean, that's what this is all about anyway. It's making our apps and our irrespective of infrastructure, more flexible, more available, and more secure. And we get caught up in, which virtualization platform is the best. The reality is they're all going to look pretty similar from a functionality perspective in the long term, whether you're talking about Hyper-V, whether you're talking about Citrix's stuff, VMware's virtual infrastructure, Oracle's VM, Sun's.
This is really looking like the database market.
Well,
and I think you said in one of your posts that the hypervisor is actually going to become a commodity, and you're calling for industry standardization.
Yeah, and I mean, I think the customers will demand that. I mean, and that's when you look at the benefits of what you would get out of that, it sure in the long term would be nice to be able to say, I don't really, irrespective of infrastructure, my apps can run anywhere on anything. The challenge will ultimately be getting this standardization set up, and we've not been successful with this in the physical world, so one has to wonder how successful we'll be in the virtual world, of allowing all of these management, provisioning, governance tools, security tools, compliance tools, to understand a common set of metadata to allow us to achieve that goal. So you see announcements that certain management stacks will support virtualization platforms running on Hyper-V and Citrix and or VMware. I mean, ultimately, if you look at the long-term approach of what virtualization means from, let's say, Cisco's perspective, Cisco, if you look at the 7000 Nexus series switch, that's a 15 terabit switch that relies on a Linux-based operating system that is heavily virtualized. In their vision, in the long term, if you look at their data center 3.0 mapping, they want to run applications virtualized in the network switches. What does that mean to the virtualization space? I/O virtualization, storage virtualization. It is an absolutely amazing set of ingredients in this pot that's being stirred up. And it's not all new. certain elements of it and the applications are, but we got a lot of work to do.
Well, we'll be keeping our eye on it, and we definitely look forward to your talk at Black Hat. Thanks a lot, Chris.
You're welcome. Thanks.
Well, that does it for this edition of Security Wire Weekly. You can check out our previous podcasts by going to our podcast landing page at searchsecurity.com/podcast. And as always, you can get the latest security news and information at our news page at searchsecurity.com/news. For now, I'm Rob Westervelt. Have a great day.